are on a different level. And I would remind people this. LeSean McCoy played for a losing football team last year. Jamal Charles played for a 2-14 team last year. And I would say that those two are probably two of the top three, if not two of the top four running backs in the NFL.
And that's what you, in terms of team result, it doesn't take you far enough. It's a good thing to have. I would never say you don't want to have a quality player at every position, but you better have something else. And it's the something else that gets you to the Super Bowl, that makes you a contender, that makes you a champion. The something else, and that starts at the quarterback position. This is what the Browns have done, however you see it, and you can hate it, and so many of you do. And I started to say, well, this is the outrage, you expect it, and you take it, and the day-to-day hits that we're all sort of feeling here in Berea, but it's really gotten out of control, and many of the voicemails that I've been hearing that have been directed to the Cleveland Browns daily voicemail line, very nasty, very inappropriate stuff that
really?
I'm hearing. Yeah. And honestly, as your co-host, but more importantly, as your friend, I didn't want to share because it's that ugly and it's that bad. I wouldn't let I won't let anybody that I care about hear this. I'll make it for my own ears because it's that bad and it's that ugly and it's that awful. Calm the hell down, people. This doesn't require that kind of vitriol. And that's all it is now. You just want to rant and rave and shout and yell. Nathan just laid it out for you. I'll lay it out for you. This is not the end of the world move. This move doesn't say that. It just doesn't. And I think people are reacting now for the sake of reacting. It's silly.
I mean, LeSean McCoy's on a team that's 1-2 right now. And LeSean McCoy is playing better than any running back in the National Football League.
This was not a transformative player that the Browns have said goodbye to. They can and will recover from this. I wrote this for ClevelandBrowns.com, the five takeaways from it. And excellent running backs are much easier to come by than excellent quarterbacks. I'll stand by that.
It's a fact.
And in this move, now, have they done it and have they gotten it? And are they there to the, you know, the end result of this is a ways away.
That's tough for people.
So that's tough to fathom because you can't see an immediate result here. And I'll buy all that and understand all that. And I'm as anxious as anyone else to see this work out. I'm not feeling good right now. I don't feel good about the 0-2 Browns, who could easily be 0-3. I'm not feeling good that we could come back from, I'm going to Minnesota and come back on a very long flight back from Minnesota with a third loss and more bad football being played. I'm all those prospects bug me, but I am holding on to as tightly as I can the idea that what might happen in 2014 is that a quarterback changes everything here from that draft and that you have positioned yourself as a team to get that. And what are the other pathways to that? I don't know.
I think it's tough, and I get the emotional visceral response for everybody that was focused on 2013. And it makes sense. Listen, this team is not going to go to the playoffs in 2013. I think that is apparent. It would be a shock of epic proportions if that were to be the case. May have been, even if they had Trent Richardson, a shock of epic proportions. Certainly in your eyes, it was. And I get it, you know, it's tough, but I think that long-term, and that's the thing, that's what's frustrating. People in Cleveland have been hearing long-term, this will be better, since 1999, and it hasn't been. And I think that, you know, you're trying to get the faith of an ownership group that and a new management team that, you know, doesn't have the track record here in Cleveland. I think if Bill Belichick did this, it would be regarded as a genius move. I remember when Bill Belichick traded Richard Seymour, when Richard Seymour was still a Pro Bowl-level player for a first-round pick, and people thought it was a genius move. And he played at arguably a more, you know, at defensive tackle in today's NFL, arguably a more important position. So he was lauded as a genius for it. Because it's the Browns, because it's a running back, and I think some of this has to do with the proliferation of fantasy football. Because it's a skill position player, it seems like a bigger deal to people than if it were a defensive player, a great cornerback, a great linebacker.
More than that, Nathan, it's the third overall pick label. That's the label that's got people. That's what they're hung up on. That is exactly what this is about, where he was picked and that decision to overdraft him third overall in the draft, a running back, which is not logical in any form to make a player that high at that position pick that high. And the assumption I had, and I said this on the show yesterday, I'll keep saying it because this was in my mind that day. I was sitting there in Radio City Music Hall when that pick was made, thinking, wow, third overall pick for this guy. You know, I thought he was good, and I saw all the ratings, and I studied everything going into the draft. He must be unfriggin' believable. He will be, he's going to carry this franchise on his back, be dynamic, be Adrian Peterson, and maybe then some. And we nothing close to that. Nothing close to that. Ordinary, average, less than that now. And everything you just said about LeSean McCoy and other backs that we saw on the field playing on Thursday Night Football and other backs that we see. And again, on the list of running backs in the NFL, whoever's having great seasons, it's not the position that you're looking for greatness. It's the position that you're looking for compliment. The greatness is the guy under center. The guy who is going to keep afloat a team that has a lot of offensive problems is named Tom Brady, not right. A running back. The guy who is working with a great cast of receivers and a passing game that looks like it's going to dominate the league and a team that's going to dominate the league is named Peyton Manning. That's who you're looking at. That's what you're looking for. And it's interesting and maybe ironic or whatever that Sunday the Browns play in Minnesota. They're going to share the field with the best back in the game. Best back in the game. And right now that best back in the game is part of an 0-2 team. And he's having, I mean, he had a 100-yard even game last week.
Against Chicago.
His first of the season. Didn't crack 100 the first game.
He did have 3 touchdowns in week 1.
But had three TDs, yeah. And they still lost. And we're going to see where this goes. Will he trample what has been a very stout run defense? We'll see. That's the challenge of the Browns to handle that. But I sit here saying that we're going to get another reminder of what a back means or doesn't mean. There is no team in the league that has hitched its wagon to a back the way the Vikings have.
Right. And you know, we look at Adrian Peterson's career. How many playoff appearances has he made? How far has he ever gone in the playoffs? And listen, it's also telling that this year not a single running back was drafted in the first round of the NFL draft. So I think that it's a changing league, et cetera. And I know some people out there are upset. We got a tweet right now from @Zerv64 says, sick of all you trying to get excited. There isn't anything left. So drop this stupid act. We're going 2-14. I don't think we're saying that anything's going to happen this year. I didn't say that. What we're trying to get excited about is talking about strategically thinking the long-term viability of this organization after this move and what they were trying to accomplish. I don't think there's a, you know, listen, it's not like if Willis McGahee comes in here and averages 3.5 yards per carry and catches the ball reasonably, let's see what happens there. You know what I mean? Let's see what happens. And people who are upset and saying, you know, oh, everybody's turning on Trent right now. I was very excited about Trent and this offense to come into the beginning of the season. I was very excited about it. There were also, if you go back and play every episode of this show, concerns about his ability. And we thought that perhaps it was because of the injuries that he averaged 3.5 yards per carry. It was the injuries last year that he didn't have any of the explosive plays. Well, he has none this year. Zero. Not a
right.
single one.
Right.
So I think that at some point it becomes a little bit apparent. And I'd say this. Whether you guys think that I was higher on Trent Richardson then than I am now. And by the way, I think Trent Richardson's going to be very productive in Indianapolis.
He's in the right offense for him.
He needs to be on a winning team so that he can be
grinding,
a pound. Right.
But that's their style. No, their style of offense is very different
right.
from the Browns.
Sure.
Pounding, grinding.
Sure. And whether or not you respect, value my opinion, obviously, if you're listening, I think you know that I do my research, I get in the numbers, and I give you my opinions based on facts and based on my own observations. But one guy who's been around more of the greatest backs in the history of the NFL than anybody is Norv Turner. And if Norv Turner was going to say to this organization that if, you know, he's Emmitt Smith or he could be LaDainian Tomlinson with his run-pass options, there's no way that this team is trading Trent Richardson.
I know for a fact this coaching staff, how they broke down and analyzed not just Trent Richardson but multiple players. There were concerns over his vision over not how he sees that he needs glasses or contacts or whatever, but his vision, his ability to see beyond, see the holes, see how they open, see where to cut, where to go. If you watch him, he is a pure classic collision runner. What does that mean? It means that when he goes through a hole, he's not interested in finding the path of least resistance and elusiveness. He will take the path that takes him into defenders' crosses pathways with defenders and will count on his muscle, on his strength, on his power to drive forward. And it's instinctive, but it's also the way he's built. It is also physically the way he does things. He is not a neat scat, you know, light on his feet sort of player. He can be fast and he can be elusive, and we've seen it in some instances, but that's not the brand style of what Trent Richardson is about. And even though he dropped those 10 pounds, you know, he may want to get that muscle, more of that even back on him, because in this Colts offense, that's how they're going to utilize him. He's going to, they want that grinding, pounding sort of player, because that is the style that Chuck Pagano favors in his offense. And that is not, you brought up a great point with North Turner. That's not what he was looking for. Deion Lewis was much more the profile of that back, with not the accomplishment, didn't have the star career coming in, was an under-the-radar trade acquisition from Philadelphia, but this team was high on what he could do, and we saw it in training camp and preseason what he could do. And now we don't see him anymore because
he's
injured. Of the Brooklyn League. And here's another thing I want to get to, because it's sort of helped fan the flames. I know Mike Holmgren well, was here with him when we, you know, came when we started the show. Back in 2011, he had been here for already a season at that point, and I've known him a long time. Go back to his days of coaching in Green Bay, a lot of history with Mike. I would have preferred that. I mean, he's going to weigh in on it. There's no doubt, because this is the guy that was drafted on his watch, Trent Richardson, and by no means would I expect him to stay silent on it, or that media wouldn't pursue a reaction from him. And I've generally known Mike to handle those situations, I think, pretty well. He's got, Mike can talk, and he was a teacher. He's an orator. He can command the room when he speaks. And so what he said, and we've actually got that, we actually, I mean, it's all over the place, but there's sound from an interview that he did. He has a regular spot on a Seattle radio station. And this is what he said about the trade, and then I got to say something about that.
I'd shake hands and walk.
I would. You'd quit. On the spot, you quit.
Yeah.
Wow.
I would.
Yeah.
Because if I disagreed with it vehemently.
Right.
And I said, this is, I couldn't buy in. Mm. I mean, so there's decision. But you know what? I'm not saying I'm right. I'm just saying that's what I would do.
Sure.
And then, you know, because you have to be true to yourself in this business.
Okay. I understand where he was coming from. He has a obvious sense of loyalty and attachment to Trent Richardson. But what he was saying, and I'm not 100% sure if he understood or realized one of the ramifications of that, but one of the ramifications of that was it was a shot at Rob Chudzinski. It came off, unfortunately, in a negative way toward Rob, and Rob didn't deserve that. Rob had there was no way the head coach of the Browns, the current head coach of the Browns, needed to hear a guy who is a Hall of Famer and is going to be as a coach and has accomplished everything he did as in this game for a long time. And yes, left here on the bad terms because people just didn't like, because it didn't happen on his watch. This team continued to struggle and lose. But to narrow it down to that basically, if I'm in the shoes of the head coach, I'm quitting over this. Not fair to Rob, and that's regrettable. Anything else he had to say about it, I can see how he felt about Trent and about the situation, but to frame it that way was unfortunate because Rob didn't deserve that. Rob didn't deserve that.
And I don't think that was the case. I think obviously this decision, and Joe Banner alluded to those comments on Mike and Mike this morning, saying that that wasn't the case in our situation. And he said, I think, and this is a quote from the CEO of the Cleveland Browns, I think the most important thing for me to say is we don't do anything with Chud not right in the middle of every discussion, every evaluation. Every single time I got off the phone with Ryan Grigson, I went down, reported to him where we're at. He's a very strong believer in where we're at and where we're headed and how this is going to help us. I think the most important thing for people to realize is we're all on the same page. This is a collaborative decision that everybody in the organization, from the owner, myself, the head coach, everybody involved, felt strongly it was a good thing to do. So I think that, you know, if Holmgren wasn't on the same page and if Chud wasn't on the same page, I'd imagine it would have caused some type of ripple.
And via Twitter, we're both seeing this, and of course it's directed to both our Twitter accounts, @VICCARUCCI, @NathanZEGURA. And Bill is one who has had a few tweets here, but one of them, and you responded already via Twitter, saying, you know, that if you thought this guy was so ordinary, Trent Richardson as a running back, why weren't we proposing this trade? Well, again, from a timing standpoint, I would not have proposed this trade happening two games into the season because it wouldn't have occurred to me to make that move now. I wasn't even thinking, honestly, about any trades, maybe till you get closer to the trading deadline and you look at the record and you see where you are. But my first thought might not have been Richardson, but he'd have been on my list. As far as I was concerned, after, you know, a five-win season and 9 wins in 2 years, who isn't expendable on this roster? Who couldn't be exposed to the trades to a trade scenario? And I felt that as we went through this year, that was going to become a discussion. And by the end of the year, more roster cleaning is and will happen on the offensive side of the ball because it was the defensive side that got the attention this offseason. So normally speaking, this is a highly unusual thing. So, no, I wasn't sitting here saying, yep, what the Browns got to do 2 games into the season is trade Trent Richardson. But not saying that is not the same as saying they've got the right guy at the position. I was waiting for him, and you were waiting for him to do something special.
I thought he would do something special. And I know two games is not enough time to see it.
I was going to say, 2 games didn't say I didn't think he wasn't ever going to, but right. I was still waiting for it.
Yeah,
right?
I was still waiting for it as well. And listen, it has happened. He has been traded. So now the fact of the matter is you comment on what this trade means, and that's it. That's all that we can talk about. We were not the decision makers. We didn't make the trade. I'm just telling you why I understand what they did from their point of view, and I also understand why people are upset. I understand why people who have season tickets for this season are upset. And one person summed it up, and I thought this was actually pretty interesting, and it's from the One Man Dog Pound on Twitter. He said, bottom line, Trent was symbolic of hope, and we're sick of our hope being treated like an asset. It was a slap in the face. So I get that Trent was symbolic of the hope, and it's shocking. This doesn't happen. A player doesn't get drafted, but if he traded this quickly, but if he wasn't the number 3 pick, and I think if you went back and that draft was redone again, if you could go in a time machine, there's no way he's drafted number 3 overall, first of all. You just, at this point, Trent Richardson is a second-year running back who has not put up numbers that are really, if you look at his current numbers, that much different on the same number of carries as Mark Ingram. And I don't think anybody, if Mark Ingram were traded for a number one draft pick by the Saints, people would be over there high-fiving the Saints, saying what geniuses they are.
And what people don't get about this business, and I'm just, maybe you become jaded about it because you're around it long enough, and I've been around it long enough to say
Yes, you have.
That when regimes change, when new decision makers take over football teams, and they are charged with turning around and fixing what is broken in many bad ways, because when they walked in this building, again, they're walking into a team that not only had perpetual losing, but just had taken more backward steps over the years. Hope started when 2010, Mike Holmgren and that regime showed up, and that's the one I had been part of when I came in here to start this show in 2011. And I'm sitting there like everyone else saying, okay, is it going to get better? When's it going to get better? And you don't see it happening. And then you see, you know, in many cases, you see some regression. And then you see, okay, where will this get fixed? And then new folks come in, and everything that was put in place to be the hope of the previous regime does get changed. Now, I'm not saying that's the right or wrong way to do things. People, though, seem to think, Browns fans seem to think, this is an exclusive Browns problem. This happens in many other, I know that doesn't necessarily make you feel better. This happens elsewhere, folks. It happens around the National Football League a lot, in pro sports a lot. Someone else's idea of what should make you hopeful is what takes hold. That's what this move is part of. Trent Richardson represented something else to someone else. Obviously, such deep feelings that Mike Holmgren expressed those when he went on radio in Seattle. But that is someone else's, attached to someone else's vision. This vision is not their vision, and it's different, and that's how it goes. We're going to have Bernie Kosar with us, by the way, at the bottom of the hour to kind of sum up the week that was here, and there's a lot to talk about, and we're going to talk about this game Sunday. Yes, the Browns playing the Vikings. We are. We're going to talk about a new quarterback for the Browns, Brian Hoyer, making his second NFL start, his first start with the Browns, hometown guy, and we'll get into some of that as well, break it down. Gerard Cherry will join us in the second hour. Get his thoughts on things. Your calls. Want to hear from you. And I know we didn't get to a lot of calls yesterday. We had so much going on and a lot of people on the show, but we'll get to more of those calls. 216-578-0850, 216-578-0850. The tweets, at Browns_daily, keep them coming, at VICCARUCCI, at NATHANZEGURA. We want to hear from you. And we'll mash this thing out together. That's what we do here. Cleveland Browns Daily, driven by Liberty Ford, ESPN 850, WKNR.